Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California public health officials are holding off on declaring a statewide emergency for monkeypox for now. On Friday, Dr. Tomas Aragon of California's Director of Public Health said that while they're keeping a close eye on monkeypox and are taking it seriously, the infrastructure from COVID is in place to get necessary vaccines out to those who need them, and that the surveillance of the disease is working well. This, despite the fact that San Francisco, the day prior, declared its own citywide state of emergency. That's because the city says the state and the feds need to be more aggressive in fighting monkeypox, and there's a growing concern that it's being labeled as a disease that only the LGBTQ plus community needs to worry about, much like the AIDS epidemic back in the early 1980s. Emily Hoven joins us now from CalMatter. She has been following this. Good morning, Emily. Welcome back.
Good morning, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
First off, what are the latest numbers when it comes to the infections of monkeypox in our state? And what are some of the hot zones in California?
Yeah, so last time the state reported an update on monkeypox cases, there were about 786 cases that were known statewide and had been reported. And the main hotspots are in Los Angeles and San Francisco. And so you actually have seen a lot of the attention focused on those two areas. And there's now pressure mounting in Los Angeles to declare a state of emergency, given that they actually have more numeric cases than San Francisco. But San Francisco being a much smaller community, I think that leaders there are obviously taking it very, very seriously.
So nearly 800 cases, is it likely that this could be an underestimate?
I think definitely. I mean, I think it also depends on people's access to testing. And this is one of the things that state lawmakers and local leaders have been calling on the state and the federal government to ramp up. It was kind of interesting because the state public health officer mentioned on Friday in a statement that the state now has the capacity to process about 1,000 monkeypox tests a day, which when you think about it, seems like a very small number, considering that, as you said, we do have this COVID infrastructure in place, and all of these testing labs and testing sites that were sprung up over the past couple of years. But it's a reminder that, I guess, apparently these labs cannot just pivot quickly to testing and processing monkeypox tests. And so I think that in order to actually know how many people have monkeypox, you would have to have much more expansive testing than we currently do have.
Yeah, we don't have to go too far back to kind of live through the testing backlogs that we all endured just, you know, about, you know, a year or two ago. Can you define monkeypox, and why is the LGBTQ plus community especially being hard hit by this disease?
Yeah, so it is a virus that has been around for a long time, but has sort of started to just kind of spring back up again recently. And basically, it creates these lesions on your skin that can become very, very painful. And, you know, state public health officers emphasize that it's not fatal. It's harder to spread than COVID. You have to be in very close proximity to someone, you know, kissing them or cuddling with them or potentially, you know, having, you know, it being intimate with them or sharing the same sheets or towels as they would. And so it's a bit harder to spread. And I think part of the reason it has gotten so caught up with the LGBTQ community is that the state just released data for the first time showing that about 92% of cases have occurred in gay and lesbian Californians, and about 98% in men, so men who are bisexual or who are gay. And they have said that it's, you know, you're more likely to get it if you're having sexual contact with multiple partners. And so even though officers are emphasizing that it is not an STD, it is not something that you get, it's not a sexually transmitted disease. Nevertheless, these cases seem to have been most pronounced among members of these communities.
Yeah, and it may not just be isolated to that as cases continue to increase, and especially given that it's skin-to-skin contact or even sharing clothes, that could it can be infectious just by that. Why is there a shortage of the vaccine, though, Emily, if this isn't a new disease and vaccines are available?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question. That's what has frustrated so many state lawmakers. And we really have seen State Senator Scott Wiener from San Francisco be very aggressive in calling out the federal government for failing to have enough of these vaccines just on hand in general in case of an outbreak, and not rushing to procure more once it became clear that these cases were starting to spread more quickly. I think part of the reason why, you know, the state and the federal government had not been stockpiling these vaccines is that this disease, this virus, I think for a long time was sort of considered not a threat. Like, it had more or less been eradicated. And so, you know, it was here and there, but it wasn't ever becoming this, like, this thing that was going to concern the general population. And so I think now that it is starting to spread a lot more quickly after years and years of not doing so, it's sort of like we were caught flat-footed and we didn't have the things in place, even though, as you say, there is a vaccine. And as it stands right now, there's only one maker of the monkeypox vaccine. I believe they're based in Denmark, and you know, they're rushing to meet the demand of the entire globe, which they're having a hard time doing. So I think we're going to see a lot of other companies, you know, trying to help and add to the supply in any way that they can.
Given that the California Department of Public Health estimates that California will need, you know, upwards of 800,000 additional doses, that sounds like a lot. Is that a lot, Emily?
I guess. You would have to divide that by two because each series is about two shots. But I think it is and it's not, because that specific number they got from basically calculating the people that would be highest at risk in California, which, as we have discussed, are so far members of the LGBTQ community who have had two or more sexual partners. And so I think if you were to start expanding that beyond that to the general population, right, obviously you're going to need many, many more. And to your point that it can spread to people outside of that community, there was actually a toddler that tested positive in California about a week or so ago. I think just because they lived in a household with someone who had been exposed to it. And so, you know, if it starts becoming more and more widespread, I think that 800,000 number is definitely not going to be enough.
When it comes to the city of San Francisco, what is the state of emergency in that city help unlock in terms of resources and surveillance?
Yeah, so basically declaring that state of emergency just allows them to streamline their response, cut certain parts of the red tape of how government functions, and be able to pull down more funds to basically funnel everyone in focused on this response. And so I think, you know, part of it is the logistical aspect of it. And then I think there's also the aspect of sort of declaring it that I think is an important milestone, especially for members of the LGBTQ community who say, look, like, we don't want this to become the next AIDS. We want to know that the government is taking this really, really seriously and is investing as much resources and time as they can in addressing it and not just looking the other way while people get sick and are in a lot of pain. Even if it's not something that seems to be often fatal. And so I think that's why we are also seeing the pressure mount on the state to do this, you know, partially for those logistical streamlining and the ability to pull down more funds, but then also the ability to just kind of recognize this as a threat to a very specific group of people and then potentially more people as well as it continues to spread. And I just want to note one last thing on that that's kind of interesting is that the state, I think, obviously right now is saying, okay, look, people are not dying from this. Like, we have it somewhat under control. We don't want to declare a state of emergency. I think part of that also could be because the governor's administration has faced a lot of pushback for his COVID state of emergency, which is still in place after about 2.5 years. And a lot of his Republican critics have basically accused him of, you know, trying to keep in place his executive powers for such a long time. And I think if he were to declare another state of emergency, you might see that argument have a resurgence as well.
Yeah, and not to mention monkeypox is extremely painful, the lesions that you get on your body. Is that also why local officials or State Senator Scott Wiener and then obviously Mayor London Breed from San Francisco, they've been frustrated with the state and the federal public health response in taking on this public health crisis?
Yeah, I think definitely. And I think, you know, Scott Wiener, who is a gay man and has talked frequently about his experiences, he's kind of saying, look, like, this is another failure of particularly the federal government to recognize what people go through when they are part of the LGBTQ community and not taking the risks that they face, the health risks and these things seriously, and just kind of shunting them to the side. And I think for Mayor London Breed, obviously, you know, representing San Francisco, a city that has always been very proud of its diverse community, I think she wants to signal that she is taking this very seriously and she is recognizing what members of this community are going through. And, you know, hopefully targeting the response to those who need it most. San Francisco is actually setting aside 30% of its vaccines at one of its public health clinics to gay and bisexual Latino men, because they have found demographically that that demographic in San Francisco has had a disproportionate amount of monkeypox cases. And so really ensuring that those who are the hardest hit have the most resources available to them.
Does an emergency declaration that the city of San Francisco made free up the flow of money when it comes to vaccines and testing?
It does. And it allows them to kind of just streamline a lot of how these things get processed and coordinate the responses of different agencies. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, a lot of people want more flexibility. Recently, a group of 11 Democratic lawmakers from the state of California sent the federal government a letter basically saying, look, like, you gave us all this money for COVID testing, this federal money. Can you make it flexible enough that we can also pivot and use this for our monkeypox vaccination and testing efforts? And so I think there are these efforts to kind of free up maybe pots of COVID money that maybe aren't so necessary anymore now that things have sort of seemed to die down, and funnel that into the monkeypox threat.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Emily Hoven from CalMatters about California's response to monkeypox. You touched upon COVID numbers, and this latest round of monkeypox is coming as COVID numbers are starting to show signs of stabilization or plateauing. What can you tell us on that front?
Yeah, it's kind of a really interesting situation in terms of COVID. Obviously, we've been going through these ups and downs for years now. And after this latest surge with almost record high case positivity numbers, that number is starting to stabilize. What is really interesting, though, is that there was a recent report that found that for the first 3 weeks of July, about 1 in 7 new cases of COVID in California were actually reinfections, referring to people who had tested positive before and recovered and then caught it again, you know? And we had some very prominent scientists in California saying, look, like, we actually need to be researching the effects of people catching COVID numerous times in a row. And I think that as this pandemic continues to stretch on, and obviously more and more people will have either been vaccinated or tested positive and tested positive again, kind of understanding how those repeat infections are going to affect California and potentially inform the rest of its COVID response. Because, yeah, at this point, you know, I think that we've all kind of accepted the virus is here to stay with us for a while. And so understanding this new phase of the pandemic, I think, is going to be incumbent on state and local public health officers.
Well, finally, Emily, I mean, getting to that response, I mean, one example recently, Los Angeles County was going to reinstate a mask mandate. They have since backed off on reinstating a mask mandate. What happened there? And what does that signal just really statewide, what public health officials are grappling with?
I think it's always that balance between, you know, what they feel is their duty to protect the safety of the most vulnerable members in their community, and then also just, you know, kind of the exhaustion of constantly switching on and off these various mandates. And it's kind of confusing messaging for a lot of people to understand. And people may or may not comply. And so then they raise the question of, you know, what's the point of doing it if no one's going to listen to it? And the reason why Los Angeles County backed off from reinstating this universal indoor mask mandate was because their numbers stabilized enough that it actually dropped them out of the highest level of community transmission as defined by the CDC. And so that allowed them to kind of say, okay, well, you don't need to have this, you know, right now. But it is interesting because Los Angeles County is somewhat of an outlier. Actually, at the time that they were considering this mask mandate, 50 out of 58 counties in California were in that high transmission level in the CDC, and Los Angeles County was the only one that was potentially considering this mask mandate, and not even the Bay Area was. And so I think that it does also indicate that different public health officers in California are starting to adopt somewhat different approaches based on their own communities and their own understanding of what's necessary. So it'll be interesting to see how all of this continues to unfold over the next couple of months.
Still a lot of content for your What Matters daily newsletter. Emily, thank you for joining us with the breakdown and an update.
Thanks so much, Vicky.
Emily Hoven is with CalMatters, and we have a link to Emily's latest articles on our Insight page at capradio.org. Up next, UC Davis will share the findings of its annual report about Lake Tahoe's biggest ecological challenges and what solutions are out there. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.